Well, good afternoon, everyone. We're here on a beautiful day. It's a day that maybe for the first time in all of your church experience that you really look forward to. And we are here on the Day of Atonement, 1998. I know it's a day that I've looked forward to because we have been going through this series on fasting and what it really means and what it means to us and what it means to God. And more importantly, what it means to Satan. Because he's not happy today. He's very, very upset. Especially with God's true church. For the first time in almost 2,000 years, I'm assuming that the apostles and the original church understood. At least they understood at the beginning. How long that lasted, I don't know. But we have the knowledge now about a fast, what it means, that we absolutely stand with God and Jesus Christ. And no one out in the world sees it. Anyone to see us right now in this room or coming to church, getting prepared, would go, well, it's just another day. There's only one that we really want to see us. And that, of course, is Satan. The Father already knows we're with him. That's why he's revealed the knowledge. If he didn't reveal the knowledge, then we'd be like all the rest of the scattered sheep, not knowing, having those shepherds continue to eat and feed and clothe themselves off of them and off of their backs. And that's what they're doing, because that's what God says. It's not my words. Be mad at God. He says, my shepherds are doing that. Now, he certainly is not talking about the Pope. Talking about my shepherds. And so they certainly have done that. And it's not that they're going to go to hell. They're all going to be in the kingdom of God with all of us. But God uses different people at different times to accomplish different purposes. And he allows Satan, he has allowed Satan to work within the church. I truly believe that today Satan must leave. Because we're at the end. We're not at the beginning. We're at the end. How long this end period is going to be, I don't know. He'll let us know. He hasn't disappointed us yet. But Satan, how can he stay around? And as we go through the sermon today, I think you'll realize that Satan can't stay here. He's been exposed. He's been exposed by many, many years, bringing us up to this day, right now, today. And I believe that God is going to give his church that power and inspiration and direction to each one of us that we've never had before. And a strength and a hope and a confidence. Because that's what comes with standing with Jesus Christ and the Father. And truly knowing who we are. We're not thinking about it this year. We're doing it. That's a big difference. So I would like to start like Mr. Armstrong always did. And we always do, on every holy day. Why are we here? Why are you here, and all those people out there aren't? Why are we here, and a lot of our past association, they're no place. They're not even fasting. That's a shame. But they too will learn to keep the holy days again, and keep the Ten Commandments again, because God says they will. They're missing out on a big piece of joy in a person's life. We're here because God commands us to be here. This is the day that we stand against Satan with our Father. There's a lot of other meanings to atonement, and it pictures a lot of things. A lot of things are going on in this timing, as we will see on the Day of Atonement. But as we fast today, we stand against Satan. And Satan knows it. Don't think this is going unnoticed by Satan. He's confused the church for all these years. No more confusion about this point. And this is the point that brings him down. He doesn't like it. So if he heaps upon some trials in your life, don't be surprised. Let's hope not. Let's hope that God protects us from all that. But when trials do come, we stand with God. and he gives us that strength. We are spiritual Israel. That's who we are. I had a question the other day. Someone said, well, it's going to be interesting where, you know, how God is calling all of us, because we have to fill up all these 12 tribes, you see, and 12,000 from this tribe, 12,000 from that. But we have to remember that God in the spiritual nation grafts in to that nation. Where he is putting us, who knows? Who cares at this point? Because if the Father's doing it, it's perfect. So it'll all come out right. We'll find that out later. But we symbolize, and we are, spiritual Israel, this church. If we don't fast, we're not of God. We're not his children at this point. You know, physically fasting on the Day of Atonement doesn't mean that you are a first fruit. I mean, I've seen people do these things for 40 years and were no more converted than a doorknob. And that's not judgment against them. I'm not condemning them to hell. It's just that obviously they were here for some other reason, and then they have left. I mean, they really left, not even to any other organization. They've just really left. And they fasted all that time. So it's in here. It's in here. It's the Holy Spirit. And if that's there and we're fasting, we're his. You know, you must keep these feast days where God places his name. And that's what we're doing today. You know, we were in different places and he kept, well, move on to this and move on to that. He said it here, that's why we're here. You know, we can't go to just a place of our own choosing. We never did with Mr. Armstrong, we can't now. How can we do that? God always does work through his church and his government. Because if we go on our own, then God doesn't honor that. We all know that. These are holy convocations, as we will read. Okay, there's a lot of people out there, though, that are blind and naked, just lukewarm, still filled with self. And we see that with all these other organizations. And some keep it here, some keep it there, some keep it all over the place. But they'll understand a little bit later. But it is exactly the thinking that Satan wanted within God's church. You know, we look back in the past years, that's exactly what Satan wanted. Get this mass confusion going out there in the church. Everyone kind of thinking their own thing. Well, what happens? We went through that last week about serving two masters. It just starts to do this. And look what happened to the church. It's all scattered. And so he has come full circle on his things. You know, we can't do it on our own. We do it where God is doing it. That's the only way we can do it. And we're pleased to do it. And there's always a good spirit, a good attitude, and friendliness. And it's good. Always is. So why are we here? I did a lot of talking there, but why are we here? Does God back up what I just said? Yes. He places his name. He does it. Let's go back to Leviticus 23. You know, we generally only go to the holy days unless some sermon is about sacrifice or something else. Generally at the holy days. And it's not too much to ask that we go back and read over this occasionally. To keep it in mind, and we always have new people with us and children growing up, and they read that. They read it every year. Mr. Armstrong always says, by repetition, 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 and finally, you know, it sinks into our hard brains sometimes, and we remember it the rest of our lives then. So I keep saying, train a child in the way he shall go, and he shall not depart from it. And they don't. They really don't. Of course, God's Spirit has to be working with the child, too. And if he hasn't called them to be a first fruit, they'll be nice children, but they may not always be in church. But at least you did your job when it was your job to do, and that's what we have to do. So starting in verse 26 of Leviticus 23, he says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Also, on the 10th day of the 7th month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation unto you," which means a public meeting, where you gather together, where God has placed his name, "and you shall afflict," or fast, "shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord." Now, we don't have altars here, and we haven't been killing any animals today. They used to do that. And as we go all the way through the great last day, we'll find they'll do that again. But it'll be an honor to God. It'll be a teaching mode that God does use. But as far as the individuals and God's children, we will not have to do that. It'll be more for the priests and an honor to God. And we'll get more into that in the great last day, in that sermon. "And you shall do no work in that day," in that same day, "for it is a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you before the Lord your God. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted, or is not fasting in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people." Now this isn't like you do something wrong and you're put outside the gates, or you're put outside the national boundaries of Israel. On this day, when you look up these words, it means to kill. To kill. And as we go through this, because I don't have time to read all the way through it and then come back and then explain it spiritually. We're going through the physical aspects. Let's keep in mind the spiritual aspects of this. If you're in God's church, supposedly saying that you are a spiritual first fruit and a spiritual Israel, and you're not fasting today, are you standing with God? Are you one of his sons? No. And what's going to happen? You're going to be cut off. Now, you'll learn later. But he's talking here that anyone in the nation, even strangers, you'll see, if they're coming through the country of Israel, if they do not fast that day, they will be killed. Killed, cut off. And that's what we are without Christ, without God, without his church. What are we? We're dead. We're cut off. We have no access to him. And he does mean killing here. I heard one minister say, "Oh, well, you just have to leave the camp." Oh, no. This one, get the knives out or the rocks, because they're going to kill you. This is a very important day to God. This is when his children stand with him against the force of the evil part of this universe. This is a happy day for our Father and for all of us. I think everyone in this room looked forward to this atonement, because we knew what it was going to be. It says in 29, "For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that self same day shall be cut off from among his people. And whatsoever soul it be that does any work in that self same day, the same soul will be destroyed from among his people." Now, destroyed means removed. So I didn't look that one up again, but it means remove. That may be removing outside of the gates. But if you're not fasting, you're dead. That's big. You know, God doesn't ask that of anything else, any other of the holy days, as far as I know. So it says in 31, "You shall do no matter of work. It shall be a statute forever." Forever, throughout your generations in all your dwellings. "It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest. And you shall afflict your souls, fast that day, in the 9th day of the month at even. From even unto even shall you celebrate your Sabbath. Now, some people get confused because it says all of a sudden the ninth day, and he said before it's the tenth day. Well, he's telling you in that ninth day, when that even begins, which of course is the tenth day, and all the other scriptures in the Bible is saying the tenth day, and he's saying here, he's talking about this sundown. It's from sundown to sundown. When that even begins, you start to keep that. See? From even to even. The whole day on the 10th. That's when you keep that. And when you look up all the other scriptures, which I don't have time to go through, believe me, it all says on that 10th day, you better be fasting. Because if you're not, you know, get your head cut off. God doesn't like that. Yeah, look up the word atonement. And atonement means, there were some other words here, but they're very clear words here that all of us understand. It means to cover. It means to cover. Remember, this day pictures that high priest, our high priest, Jesus Christ, being killed, murdered, and being accepted by the Father. With all of that in mind, you know, he does cover us with that blood. Means to cancel. Means to cleanse. Means to forgive. Be merciful. Means to pardon. And to reconcile. Bring back. Stand with God. That's what this atonement means. It was interesting that there was a... this comes in play a little later, but there was a word that was taken from that word in the original. And it means a lid used only of the cover of the sacred ark. It's that covering again. And on that mercy seat. And whenever I look up words, I usually go a few words before and a few words after, and you'll be surprised how many in the same area of that word will come from that word and from that root. And sometimes it gives a little more expanded of the meaning behind it. You know, there's a lot of other things that are happening here on the Day of Atonement. Remember the plan that we got up to here in Trumpets. And that plan was coming to the end of the 3.5 years. And the two witnesses were there. And all these trumps had gone off. 6 trumps had gone off. And all these marvelous things had happened that God was doing. We saw the angels all fighting together, and a third part of the satanic angels were killed. And all these demons and Satan all became visible and chased mankind around for 5 months. Was able to sting them. Plus all the manner of plagues that the two witnesses brought on the earth to bring down not man, but Satan's kingdoms of this earth and all the nations of this earth. And that's what we have to remember, that it's always against Satan. It's not against man, although man does sin. The brunt of this is all against Satan and bringing down those kingdoms. And we have to remember about this whole picture where we were. And then we got to the point where the two witnesses were killed, laying in the streets. And we said at the end that now that 7th trump goes off. Well, we will find that atonement truly pictures the first resurrection. That's the day we're going to stand with God, isn't it? Really stand with God. Right now we're doing something that pictures what's coming. But it all is in this picture. We need to put some other physical parts together here and to see what happens on this Day of Atonement. Now, it all gives a picture of God's plan, and I've remarked through many sermons how it overwhelms me to go back all the way from Genesis on and see the Father's mind. Now, once we have the plan, now once we really know His mind and the very plan of salvation, what He's going to do for all mankind, to go back to Genesis right in the beginning and see that His mind, His goal, He was single-minded. There was no other way of thinking. It was an absolute perfect way of thinking. And everything in this Bible is describing, leading up and including the great last day, the fulfillment of His plan. And He never misses a beat. In every example, in every miracle, in everything Christ did, in everything the prophets did, in everything that is written in this book, is to the true plan of salvation going right to the great last day and beyond. Marvelous. He never missed a word, never missed a beat. And we read this for 40-some years and went, I wonder how He's really going to work that out. Because we couldn't see it. You can't see it without God's Spirit. I don't want to say it's a magical book, but it's a very special book. And can only be understood through and by the power of God's Spirit. How many times has God revealed different things? And we go through those in sermons, and we come back and we study those later, and you read and you go, look at that. I have read the Scripture hundreds, if not thousands, of times, and I never saw it. I never understood it. And the more He reveals His plan, of course, then in your own personal study, as you're going through different things, it just starts to leap out at you. I mean, that's not a revelation. That's just inspiration. The revelation was already given. But by the inspiration of Jesus Christ and that Spirit, now once the truth is in your mind, now it starts to build. And it just comes out and it helps put the meat on the bones that He does through revealing things. And He certainly has given us that whole skeletal frame. And as we study, as we go through more things, as we have more sermons, He keeps adding the meat. Doesn't change the plan. Just keeps, you know, no one can study the whole Bible all at once. Everyone studies in different areas at different times. And once the knowledge is up here, I find this, that once God's truth is put into a person's mind, it's there. Now, God may not stir it up right away, but it's there. But when it's time, He'll click that key. And once He has clicked that key, with all of us who are attending, of course, and are here today, He's clicked that. That's why we're here. And so the Bible just starts to open up. That doesn't change the plan, doesn't add to the plan, but it really fills in all the details. And you get to know your Father more and more and more. Okay, let's turn over to Numbers 29. Because other things happen on this day, and they will in the great last day. See, I was going to reach for my water right now, because my mouth is getting a little dry. And I think I've told it before, over in England, Mr. Armstrong was visiting on atonement one time, and he was up there, and he was going to town, and he says, would somebody please bring me some water? And he's preaching about atonement, and a little later, please give me some water, and some more about atonement, and finally, I'd really like some water. So one of the elders or deacons or whoever went up there and whispered something in his ear, and he says, oh, that's right, brethren, we can't have water today, you know. And so, if it was there, I would have grabbed it by nature. But we will keep on going. And if I start spitting cotton, then pray that my saliva comes back. But it is not that big of a trial, frankly, especially today. It is a joy. Isn't it a joy to keep this fast when you know why you're doing it? It's a joy. Because every time I get hungry, every time I get thirsty, I think, Well, take that, Satan. Take that. We're not afraid of you. And we don't stand by you. We're opposed to you. In fact, the judgment is already in. You are going to the lake of fire. And we want no part of you or this world that you have. Unfortunately, we have to live in it. But we can back off it a little bit. We can realize what we're seeing and what we're doing. It's a joy to stand with our Father in Jesus Christ. And all of the first fruits have come before us. Some of them didn't know it, but they'll be standing there that day. We have an opportunity, a rare opportunity, in the 2,000 years of this church to know, really know, why we're keeping this day. What an honor. What a privilege that is. So here in Numbers 29, starting in verse 7, this is what he has the priests, of course, do on every atonement and on every holy day. Each one, he does a little bit different, and each offering that they give means a little different. Starting in verse 7 of Numbers 29, "And you shall have on the 10th day of the 7th month a holy convocation, and you shall afflict your souls. You shall not do any work therein. But you shall offer a burnt offering unto the Lord for a sweet savor." That's what we are. This is a sweet thing that's going on here, and all of our prayers and everything else that we do. Now he goes on. He says, "One young bullock." Now we know the bullocks picture Satan the devil. There's always a sin offering. "And one ram, and seven," interesting, "seven lambs of the first year." First fruits, aren't they? "They shall be unto you without blemish." Same way that Jesus Christ was taken out of the flock and was that lamb, an innocent lamb without blemish, taken to the slaughter. Well, that's what this is all picturing. And the seven lambs, well, we wonder what that is. Well, it's God's church. It's seven churches, seven eras. And guess what? They stand, all of those seven eras stand before God without blemish, because we are covered by the blood of Jesus Christ. We stand pure, white, and clean. Clean, white as the snow. We use that analogy because if you've ever seen really white, white snow, boy, if there's a little black flake in there, there's a dirty mark over there, there's something, boy, it stands out right away. But all of us, every human being who's a first fruit and has been a first fruit and will be a first fruit, stands as clean and as white as snow before God. I think King David used that expression as well. Maybe that's where we get that from. And the seven lambs do, the seven churches do. "And their meat offering shall be a flour mingled with oil, and 3/10 deals to a bullock, and 2/10 deals to the ram." And we'll understand all this probably later, what all the meaning is. We're starting to learn more and more, and we in the future. Don't write in for it yet. You'll get it automatically. We will have something on those sacrifices, because they're coming along pretty well. The more that we see, the more the picture that we see within each little aspect of what he's doing. It's incredible. But I hate to give a sermon on it until we know a lot more about that. Okay, in verse 11, "One kid of the goats for a sin offering, beside the sin offering of atonement, and the continual burnt offerings, and the meat offerings of it, and their drink offerings." Now, these are a lot of offerings going on, but it's all going on in the temple. It's all going on by the priests. And God instructs them that they have to do that, and they will in the great last day again, as a teaching tool for everyone, and especially the children and the new generations that come up. Because each one of these has a purpose. And this, what I just read, is over and above all the weekly sacrifices that have to take place, plus all the daily offerings that have to take place. God does require a lot of offerings. He never wants this plan to be forgotten. And he never wants Satan to be forgotten. And that evil, he never does. We'll see that as we go on. Now, there was another ceremony here. They had to do all of that, but now there's another ceremony. You know, what did the high priest have to do for this atonement? Now the priests, those high priests came from Aaron and that family. And all the rest of the people in the Levitical priesthood came from that tribe of Levi, which was big. But all of these physical things that they had to do shows and pictures us the spiritual and what's happening. That's why we have to look at the physical. So let's read about that. Let's turn over here to Leviticus 16. Oops. It's going to reach for that water again. It's getting kind of dry. Good. Satan sees it too, doesn't he? We're not having it. It's a constant reminder of what we are doing today. Leviticus 16, let's start with verse 1. We'll just read through this. And I'll try to explain as we go through this some of the spiritual aspects of what this pictures. And the Lord spake unto Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron. He's setting that timing there. When they offered before the Lord and died, because they were doing something wrong, and God killed them. So, in verse 2, now he starts to speak. Now this is what's going to happen on this Day of Atonement that we're keeping today. Now, Moses didn't institute this. God did. And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron, your brother, that he come not at all times into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat which is upon the ark, that he die not. Even Aaron the high priest could not go behind that veil and come into the holy of holies. If he did, he would die. For I will appear in a cloud upon the mercy seat. And that we'll see a little bit later also. Why is this? What is this cloud? What is that picturing? There's a cloud on this mercy seat. Thus shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bullock for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. That's what God requires. This killing of this bullock, the sin offering, is showing Satan's death. That's what that is. And it shows this death of Satan, and it's going to take place. It's very fresh and key in God's mind, and always will be, and it has to be in ours. He shall put on the holy linen coat. We don't have time to read this, but back in Revelation it talks about the first fruits being clothed with linen. Now it says the whole great multitude comes up with white robes on. Well, when it speaks about linen, it's always in the holiest of terms. And these things are holy to God, and they're covered with linen. Linen, of course, is a very fine thing, even in today's world. We had this pure linen tablecloth, which we used for Passover services. And it was hard to iron, but it was beautiful. And I guess our former association has all those things now. That's okay. God will supply us with our own, and He has. And I know my dad bought for the church years and years ago, and it was very expensive back then. I think they run $300 or $400. Or that one was absolutely huge. It probably was $500 or $600. Very, very expensive, even in today's market. When you have fine linen, you take care of that, because there's a price to that. And God only uses the finest, and He shows that. That's why we use that on Passover, when we had it available. And he shall have linen breeches upon his flesh, and shall be girded with linen girdle. He said all the stuff, a little hat on he's got to put on, these are holy garments. And they picture that. I have a reference here you can look up. I did not go back and look this up, to Revelation 19:8. Maybe that is talking about those holy garments. If I'm steering you wrong, I'm sorry. I generally don't do that. And I don't like to use my inspired notes on my Bible, because most of them are garbage from all the past years. So hopefully that'll be okay. Therefore shall he wash his flesh in water, and so put them on. So he has to be absolutely clean, just like at baptism, you see. Has to be this new man. Has to put on this linen, same type of linen that God is going to give the first fruits. It all pictures this. Of course, it pictures Christ too as our high priest. And he shall take of the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids of the goats for a sin offering, and 1 ram for a burnt offering. And Aaron shall offer his bullock. This applies to him. His bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and for his house, for his family. So he has to be clean first before anything gets going. Because he's going to represent what? He's going to represent the physical children of Israel. So what did Christ do? Christ was the first fruit. He had to go through, he's the first of the first fruit. He had to go through it first. He had to become holy first. So when he did that, then he could do it. He could be the high priest for all of us spiritually and for the world. In verse 7, and he shall take 2 goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the 2 goats. Now, of course, these 2 goats are the ones that we always thought. One was Christ and one was Satan. One would go out in that wilderness. There's a bug flying around. Now I don't have water and there's a bug bothering me. He was flying right for my nose. So hopefully he goes to another part of the room. Hopefully it doesn't bother any of you, but if I hear a big slap out there, I'll give you the thumbs up. It's one of these little gnats that are irritating. But we were told that these goats, one goat was Christ, one goat was Satan. Well, then later in Worldwide, at the end there, they were starting to say, oh no, both goats are Christ. How they came to that conclusion, I didn't really stay around to hear that conclusion, because it was obscene in the first place. So what we have learned is that, and what God has, of course, revealed through his plan, is both of these goats picture Satan the devil. Now find me anywhere in the Bible that God is represented by a goat. He is that lamb. And we are sheep. We are part of that flock. Who does he say when he separates the nations? Satan's nations from his nations, from the people, from Satan and his demons. He says, oh, the sheep, you come on over here on my side. And all you goats, which we see later is Satan and the demons, you go over there. God was never mixed up on this. We certainly were. Well, we're learning. He's revealing this. So, he says, Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats. See, it's not Aaron's choice. Guess what? Even these little goats don't have free moral agency. They really don't. And Aaron doesn't have free moral agency to choose which one either, does he? That was done by a special process that God had by casting these lots. That's how he would show them. And his spirit and those angels were there to make these lots, whatever it was that they did, to do it properly. It says one lot for the Lord and the other lot for this scapegoat or this satanic one. Now, we misunderstood that when it said for the Lord. But we have to keep reading and understand this. Because it was going to be used in a different way, a very special way. And Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering. And we're seeing through these sacrifices that it's always... on a sin offering, it is always a goat. It is always a bullock. It always pictures Satan. Because he is the one which is going to die for all of the sin. And he's picturing him right there sinning. He's sin and he is going to die. And that's what he's trying to do. So in a moment, we will continue on and go through the other goat and everything else that Aaron has to do.